Hi, welcome. This is a special edition of That Millwall Podcast. This episode is a round table. It's our first attempt at doing a round table. And we've got two new faces, what you'll see and hear very, very shortly. We're going to go through about six or seven topics, hopefully tonight. And we're going to put the worlds to rights. It's an open discussion. And hopefully everyone will be honest and upfront, and hopefully have you shouting on your walking the dog or driving the car. So remember, if you do want to get involved after the show, then please get involved through the comments, through various social media access, YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, etc., etc., etc. So without further ado, let's welcome my partner in crime, my co-host, my podcast partner. It is the one and only Omar.
I contemplate leaving myself on mute there just for the shits and giggles, but hello, guys.
I've already done it. During the pre-talk, mate, was already on mute, so I thought, but I won't do it through the show then.
Sure you won't. How you doing, Mickey? You're all right. I look forward to this one, mate.
Not too bad. So am I. It's the first one, and I think the guests we've got on are quite lively and good. They're virgins to the podcast arena, so that'd be good fun. This intro now is probably going to be the most you'll hear of this person all night. But it is the one and only, the football guru himself, Kai Bennett.
Hello, mate. Looking forward to this. I'll try and speak a little bit more than the old Friday Night Lives, but I'll give my best shot.
I should have got your flag set around so you could just jump on it, do you know what I mean? And get involved. But no, you'll be all right. I think we'll be all right. So we've got, we'll start with. If you watched us when we did Friday Night Live during COVID, there was a person who always got involved, regularly watched us, got involved with drinking posh beer and posh lager. It was the one and only Joe Zampa. How you doing, Joe? You all right?
I'm good. Thanks, Mickey. Thanks for your good introduction stuff. There.
No, that's all right, mate. That's all right. It could have been a lot worse, but we keep it clean for now because we want you back. So, and then without further ado, last but by no means least, it is Chris, who made contact for us through Twitter, again, another listener of the show. And welcome aboard, Chris.
Thanks a lot, mate. Yeah, buzzing to be here. Thanks for having me on.
No, that's all right. Why does it sound like it's a match signing day, doesn't it? We've got two new signings. Oh, yeah, I've always supported you. I've always loved Millwall, do you know what I mean? But right, without further ado, we're going to be straight back after this, and we're going to crack on with the first subject, which is going to be all about Rarit and how we think we probably progressed with him on board. Join us back straight after this. Welcome back then. So we're going to open the topic up on thoughts on Rarit, and to throw it open a bit, I'm going to go to you, Joe, and ask you for your thoughts on Rowett, and also have we progressed since he's been our manager?
I must say I've always been a bit of a Rowett fan. I know a lot of Mill supporters are a little bit divided sometimes, probably less so now. I think he's kind of proved he's a decent manager. But at the beginning, certainly, I think there's a real kind of divide between some of the fans like him, some not particularly liking him. I think he was getting results, but probably not playing the best of football. But ultimately, you've got to judge the guy on, you know, results and where we finish at the end of the season. And when you think about, you know, where he's finished in the last sort of two or three seasons, he hasn't really finished much lower than 12th, I think. I think his first season was after Harris just narrowly helped us escape relegation. I think we were 20th or 21st at the time. So, you know, the short answer, Mickey, you're right. I think he has, you know, helped us. I think we have progressed under Rowett. We seem a lot more stable as a championship team now. I don't fear relegation like I used to, like, you know, the last few seasons before that. You kind of fear, are we going to go down this season? Are we going to stay up? Whereas now I'm thinking, are we going to go up? You know, I'm sure I feel the same way next season if he's still there.
Yeah, 5 years now he's been at Millwall. Five years we've been in the championship. Yeah. Omar, your thoughts on Rowett as a manager, and do you think we've progressed under him?
My thoughts about 9 games ago are probably different to now. No, I'm joking. I think, of course, like, you've got to give me credit where it's due. I think Joe's hit the nail on the head there. You know, when it was obviously struggling season under Harris, Harris took us as far as he could, and testament to the man, you know, he obviously came in and kind of made it clear that, you know, he's going to try and progress us. And it's always not so much with Harris. I felt like the mentality was get to 46 points, get to 50 points and try and see where we go from there. Whereas with Rarit, it's always a lot of positivity. Obviously, at times it's quite difficult when, you know, you're struggling at times. But I think we was overdue this kind of, obviously, the 8 games unbeaten we had, and it has kind of cemented him, I think. And who knows? I mean, hopefully he stays in for a little while longer and we'll see where we go with him.
Chris, what's your thoughts on Rarit? Obviously, being at Millwall for, what, third season now, and also, do you believe we progressed under him?
Yeah, well, when he took the job, he said he had a 3-year plan to get us into the playoffs. I remember him saying that. And, you know, who knows? We'll have a conversation about that later, I'm sure. But I think we have progressed. I think in many different ways. I think the budgets we have now, the player, the caliber of player that we're able to attract, whether people think they're better than what we were able to attract before is a different matter. But the caliber of player that I think we're able to attract. So I think we have progressed under him. I guess my concern is, I believe he's on a rolling contract, I think. So I'm not sure what the summer brings for him. Obviously, with Alex coming in as well, who knows where that takes us. And obviously, I think there's going to be a lot of player turnover in the summer as well, whoever is the manager. So it'd be really interesting to see how that pans out. But I think it's not always pretty. I think we can all agree on that. It's not the most attractive of football. But I do think we've progressed under him. And I would personally be happy to see him oversee the summer changes.
I think ultimately it's obviously a like results-based business and he's doing the business for us. And I agree with Chris there. I think you mentioned obviously recruitment. I think he's shoehorned into this kind of recruiting. He's people he knows, Chris, if that makes sense. You know, obviously Bennett, Malone, players he's worked with before, Benik Afobe, Ryan Woods obviously was one of his top signings when he first came in as well on loan. Do you think obviously with Aldo coming in, you mentioned there, do you think we're going to try and steer away from a contact logbook of what Rarit has and maybe try to get an identity of what we're trying to do going forward?
I mean, I'd like to think so. Berylson come out, didn't he, and said that, you know, the January transfer window, which obviously didn't materialise, but the summer, we're going to go in a slightly different direction. But, you know, we're going to be looking at the European market. We're going to be looking at younger, more sort of agile, nimble players. So I guess we'll see what happens. But we were saying in the pre-show, I think we've got 7 or 8 players ourselves out of contract, plus all of the loan players. So I think there is going to be a real big player turnover. I would like to see us go in a slightly different direction, but I guess time will tell.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. Kai, Rarit is a manager. And, hang on, calm down. I know you want to get there. Rarit is a manager, and obviously, how have we progressed under him? And then once you've spoken, we just have a general chit-chat about Rarit, obviously, you know, about, you know, what are his pluses and negatives, I suppose, as him as a manager over the last 2-3 seasons. Go on in, Kai.
I think we have progressed under Gary. He's quite some of the things that he does in game, maybe you question. I've questioned him a couple of times, but then listening to either his post-match or he's coming out or something else you listen to, whatever, he makes a lot of sense. I think he's quite a tactical genius in that way, where when he does something, he has a reason behind it. And it does, even though it might have not gone as well as hopefully it was planned, it does often make a lot of sense what he says. That the other day he said about, I was questioning why he didn't bring Tyler on against Borough. He brought Zach Lovelace on and he said, oh, because there wasn't enough space in behind the Borough defence. Therefore, he wanted a more of a physical striker that could hold it up, which made a lot of sense. I was thinking, you know, I want to see Tyler come on, stretch him. But when he said that, you sort of think, actually, that makes sense. And maybe, you know, since he came in, I think he's definitely transformed us into a team where teams come to us now and we're actually not really confident maybe getting a result, whereas before they would have been confident maybe getting a result, especially away from home. We used to go to play teams away, whereas now we're much more hard to break down. We don't score as many goals as we might have liked to, as we may like to, but I still think we have that attacking, I guess we're dangerous when we go forward, and the players he's brought in are exciting, especially the players like Mason Bennett.
My question to you, obviously, around Rarit, do you think he lost something? And I'll come to you first, Chris, on this. Do you think he lost something when Callum Davies left?
Oh, there was a patch, wasn't there, when he left and it all seemed to go Pete Tong. Adam Barrett is an interesting one, I think, to throw into the mix with this conversation, because there's a lot of rumours about what he does or what he doesn't bring to the club. I don't know. I'm not in the know, so I can't comment. But I think he's an interesting one. And from what I've heard, Callum was kind of like the man-to-man manager, if you like, the one that would put his arm around the player, like a Conor Mahoney, for example, that quite clearly needs it, I guess. And maybe we don't have that now. And I think that one of the other topics we'll come on to later as well is about Danny Mac and sort of Rowett's relationships with people. I think that's a really interesting one as well for us to dig into. Don't know what you guys think.
Joe?
Yeah, just agree with what Chris says there. I mean, I think Callum definitely had that connection with the players. It seems quite obvious that he had the engagement with the players. They seemed to kind of be motivated with him. I don't see Rowett as a motivator. And I don't see Adam Barrett as being someone who could kind of fill Callum's shoes either. I think stylistically, they're both defensive coaches. I mean, you see Adam Barrett warming the players up before a game. He's there with the back four, you know, kicking the ball. So he's very defensive minded. But what Rowett lacks, I think, in that kind of personal relationship with the players, I think he makes up for it in his sort of psychology. The things he says, you know, in interviews, the things he says to the players. I mean, you know, what he did after the Fulham game was fantastic. You know, he told the players, you know what, let's enjoy ourselves, get out there, play with freedom, let's see where it goes. And we went on a massive winning streak. And then after a little blip against Stoke the other week, he then comes out in the press. He starts saying about, well, you know, we've got 8 games left. Let's just go out there and enjoy ourselves. Let's take every game as it comes. So little things like that he says, I think kind of motivates the players in an indirect sort of way. So he's very, very good. And I think, you know, I mentioned it as well before about how he kind of looks up rather than looks down. So he always talks about, you know, the players, the teams above us who we're chasing rather than who's behind us. So I said, what he lacks probably in motivational skills, I think he makes up, you know, sort of with his kind of psychology, you know, and getting to the players' minds. But you're right, though. I think we do lack that bit of a arm around the shoulder on a few of the players that might need it.
Kai, on that bit where you're sitting there saying, I mean, Kai, probably you best to come in there with, you have more access to Gary than what we do. Do you agree with that he's not possibly the man manager what Callum was?
No, he doesn't seem the sort of player, sort of person that would, I guess, have that, what maybe that relationship with the players. Obviously, it could be wrong in that way, but the way he comes across, he's quite, he's always very serious. He'll make a joke. Like the other day, I think what's very clever, what he does is very clever, is, as we were saying about the enjoyment of football. The other day, someone asked him again about the playoffs. He always gets asked about the playoffs every single game, and every single game won't talk about it. The other day, after the 2-0 win against Huddersfield, someone said to him, oh, Gary, is the playoffs on now? He went, I don't even know what division we're in. So he almost relieves that pressure from the players. So I think in that way, he's got a good relationship with them in the way that he puts no pressure on them. And I think Joe's right. That's very clever, because it gets the players almost motivated to do well now and thinking, well, there's no pressure on us. We've survived. There's no relegation fears. We're going to be mid-table or thereabouts if we don't go on. But can we give it a go? And I think that's what he's very good at. But maybe not the one that would, you know, put his arm around the shoulder and make sure they're okay. But he does it in other ways, I think. He makes up for it in other ways, is exactly what Joe said. But I'd like to see maybe a more attack-minded coach come in the summer. Maybe someone, I don't know, when he first came in, I would like to see someone like Kevin Phillips. But I don't know now. He's obviously worked with Gary before, but someone who's a bit more attack-minded, someone maybe who can also put their arm around the players. Maybe like a bit of a quite a good match that'll be, I reckon.
Kai, something you said there sort of triggered a question for me. There was quite a lot of hoo-ha when Alex Pearce was given another contract in the summer. Do you think there could be a kind of reason behind that then, in terms of that relationship with the players? So although he's a player, I mean, he rarely plays, right? He's kind of that arm around the shoulder to some of the players. What do you think about that?
No, I think you're spot on. I think we've had this conversation a couple of times with in the press box and stuff, and we think that Alex Pearce is that man. I think between him and Jed, and before he left, Matt Smith, I think they were the three that would really, I guess, galvanise the group, really get them going and make sure they're all okay. I think Alex Pearce has a knack of when to be serious, when to be jokey. I think everyone respects him in that changing room. But same with Jed. Jed will probably, after a loss, he'll go in, be fuming. But at the same time, he'll be able to reason with players. And I think Matt Smith was really good like that as well. Smudge had a really good relationship with the players. So he'd always talk his fellow, you know, players up, and that gave him confidence. So I absolutely agree. I think Alex Pearce was probably signed for that, and maybe even Smith the same.
I think it's an interesting contrast because, like, if you look at Rowett, and we're talking about obviously motivating, like, Harris would have his players running through like anything for him because he was that kind of personable character. And I think it is a shift, isn't it? I mean, Joe, you're nodding there. I mean, obviously, we're talking about Rowett, and you're saying about, obviously, I think Kai called him a tactical genius. I mean, I don't know if I'll go to that extreme level, but I get where you're coming from, Kai, a bit there. I think with Harris, it was bog standard. He knew what Mill was about, and he got Mill players to do the job for him, and players would obviously talk really highly of him after he left. But I guess what I'm trying to get at, Joe, is maybe Rowett's a bit more with his pedigree and championship level, and as such, so to speak, a bit more experience at this level as manager. Maybe he just has the know-how to operate at this level, I feel like.
I think you're right. I mean, you said there about Neil Harris, who's very much a 4-4-2 guy, really. It's all about motivating players, being direct, being physical. I mean, I saw some stats a while ago, and I think under Harris, players pick up a lot more yellow cards, a lot more red cards. Yeah, it's very, very physical, about being direct, getting their faces, pressing high. Whereas Rowett is very different. Yeah, he wants his players to sort of sit deep, you know, catch one on the counter-attack. And it makes me laugh, though, because sometimes, like, if you're watching them live, you're hearing fans behind you shouting at the forwards, why are you not pressing? Why are you not pressing defenders? But what they don't realise, that these forwards, the likes of Afobe, Bennett, Bury, Jed, they've been told, probably, you know what, don't press the defenders, let them have the ball there. As soon as they go, maybe it could be a plan, you know, when they go past the halfway line, then you press and win the ball, use the space behind them. But the Millwall fans, bless them, they'll watch it, and all they care about is they want fire. They want to get in their faces, attack, press high, you know. And I feel sorry for the players because they're getting, you know, stick from the fans when they're actually probably carrying out a tactical plan from Rowett. And Rowett will change games. You know, you see him, he'll often go three at the back, then he'll go four at the back, and it's not working right, let's change it again. Whereas Harris never really had that, did he? I think the only time I saw Harris really, like, chuck the kitchen sink was against Luton, I think it was, away. I remember that game. I think we were losing, and I think he put, like, four forwards on, didn't he? And we went for it, and I think we scored or got an equaliser or something. So, but you never really see Harris kind of tinkering with tactics and formation. It's very much 4-4-2. This is how we play. Morrison, Gregory, press on them, get in their faces. And it's very, very basic, but it was very effective. You know, in that season, when we finished eighth, I think we now missed out on the playoffs. But then that system and tactics didn't work the season after, because obviously we struggled. And I mean, Morrison was a lot older, so maybe he couldn't quite carry out what Harris had him doing the season before. But I would definitely say with Rowett, he's got a much better tactical, you know, mindset. You see him and Ann Barrett talking during the games, and they're pointing at players and trying to change systems. They're always trying to find weaknesses in the opposition, how they can play, like you said, about Bury, Kai. You know, why didn't Bury come on? Well, there wasn't the space to attack behind the fence. So there's always a reason. You know, and I think knowing Rowett, like you say, Omar, being a bit more experienced in the Championship, you've got to just kind of trust the guy and give him the respect and let him do what he thinks is the right thing to do, you know?
I think one thing I will say, I think, is one thing we need to improve on, though, when I think about Rowett's sides, and I suppose Millwall in general at Championship level, we just don't score enough goals, chaps. I mean, like, obviously, last couple of seasons, I think to get into that playoff position, was it this season? 39 goals scored, 36 against, I think, on the top of my head. Like, I mean, that's clearly, like, I don't know who wants to take the floor after this one, but that is, like, a serious issue that we need to address. And it's probably a tactical thing to it, but also, you know, we were playing at Huddersfield and we could have scored six or seven. And that's kind of like the benchmark, I felt like, that performance a little bit for myself.
What's interesting in that is people always ask, what's changed? You know, what happened in those last few games? Why have we suddenly started scoring goals? You know, and is Rowett a genius? I don't think he was. I think in some ways he got a bit lucky. I remember that game against Huddersfield. I think Burke got injured, didn't he? I think Bury came on and something just happened. I think we counter-attacked them. I think with Bennett's pace and Bury's pace, we got behind them. And the Phobia was, you know, was, I think the Phobia Phobia was there as well. I think we looked strong, didn't we? We looked dangerous on the break. We had that pace. I think that started back in the QPR game, if I remember. I think that's when Burke got injured, wasn't it? QPR. That's right. And then I think Bury come on and suddenly he was just scary. Like, he was on it, counter-attacking them. And that system worked with Jed behind the two fast forwards. And suddenly we were creating chances and we're scoring goals. But then you see what happens. We lose Bennett. You know, Bury then goes out of form a little bit, maybe just through a bit of tiredness. We then have to bring other players in and suddenly the system changes again. And then we kind of lack that bit of, you know, attacking threat, if you like, you know. So it's very, very hard. You can only make do with the players you've got. But it's just interesting how it kind of clicked back then. I really think Rowett was quite lucky because he kind of threw Bury on it. Suddenly it just worked. So he thought, right, this is really good. Let's keep this going for a few games, you know.
No, I agree with that. I think, you know, and I think it probably, we move on to the next subject because it probably ties in with this is, how do you think us having Aldo back is going to continue go for it? I mean, Omar's been a vocal, you know, every week about how we
advocate,
need to
you can
have,
say.
That was the word I was looking for, but for advocate, some unknown reason, I could not think of it. That was the word
I've
I was
got you,
for.
Mate.
Right
I've got
there.
You.
See, that's it. Thanks, fam. Too much top boy this week. That's what it is as well. So, yeah. Do you get me? Calm. Is I must be saying, obviously, we need to have a direction in football rather than we let a manager come in, buy a load of players. The manager then goes, we're stuck with a load of players who don't necessarily fit into the new system. And then we're just trying to put, you know, round plugs in square holes. They just don't work. So, I mean, on Aldo coming back, we'll go to you first, Kai. What's your thoughts on Aldo coming back? And also, do you think that having a set direction of how we're going to play is going to be a benefit to Rowett potentially going forward? Or do you think this is pretty much putting the writing on the wall that Rowett might not be here for much longer?
No, I think that Aldo and Rowett can work really well together. I think Bustle came in, you know, they seemed to have, as you said, a checklist of who they wanted. If it didn't fit it, it would come in. I think what Aldo would do is hopefully open up that European market, hopefully. I mean, he obviously worked with Harris for quite a while and we made some quite good signings. Okay, we did make some disastrous signings as well. Obviously, Bob Vars and Scalak come to mind when I think about them. But then, you know, Cooper, Bart, Jed, all these players that came in for very little fees, really. And I think experience, he would have done well now. With a bit of experience, you know, Stoke coming away from maybe his boyhood club and working at a club that he had no affiliation to, really. It'd be quite interesting to see what he's like. And I think Gary will probably work quite well with that. I think if they do have a set formation, he will work quite well with it because I think his set formation right now obviously is a five. If they change that set formation, then he'll have to change his mindset a little bit. But once he gets round to it, I reckon it'll be quite good because he seems to be quite good with a set formation and playing players in that position and finding players to play round there. Like also, Millwall's quite well known for versatility. And I think that will work well with a set formation as well because you've seen Leonard playing numerous amount of positions, just to name one. If we do have players injured, you can always fill the gap with a player that's maybe a bit more versatile. So maybe that might be sort of maybe the transfer idea from now on. Try and sign someone from one position, but can also play another position just in case you lose someone.
Chris?
Yeah, I think what will happen now with Aldo coming back is we'll sign Stoke players instead of Derby players. no, joking apart, I think it's interesting because I think you can kind of see the direction we're trying to go in, right? With Smith and Budvarsa moving out, and they didn't replace them, and they've, you know, as I love Smudger, I think he's a top bloke, but we've not really missed him. He wasn't the same player for me this season, but I think we're investing heavily in the youth facilities, which I think is a good sign. Obviously, seeing Danny Mack and Billy Mitchell being integrated into the first team properly this year has been really good to see. And if we can complement that with a wider breadth of a talent that Aldo can bring in, I think it can only be good for us. The one player I would just love us to sign is that number 10. You know, like Styles that plays for, is it Barnsley? And there's the lad at,
yeah, he's good, yeah.
And there's the lad at Coventry, isn't there, as well? That, I mean,
kind of my hair.
Who's the guy at Derby who the number 10 at Derby? I can't remember what his name is now.
Tom Lawrence?
Yes.
Tom Lawrence. I just want us to sign someone. And I know Luke Freeman was meant to be a nice, cheaper version of that that we brought in. But I just want to sign someone that can unlock the defence and create more chances. Because going back to Omar's point, we've never scored many goals. And part of it is part of the tactics, absolutely, the Rowett way. But I think part of it as well is we don't actually create many chances. And I'd love to see that as well. So hopefully Aldo can bring that moving forward.
I think you're right there. I think obviously as well with Aldo coming in, I just question, I'm happy that there's obviously a change in the way we're going to be recruiting going forward. But I just wonder whether or not we should have had an older, wiser football head at that kind of level as well. I mean, I don't know who I'd throw out there. Maybe a Neil Warnock, for example, or someone that's like wants to take a back seat, but kind of steer the ship a little bit in the background and could kind of bring that kind of the list of contacts, but also the experience of the game. I just like, because I think on our boards, we're always guilty of look at the players coming out of contracts, and some players you'd probably want to keep around at the place as well. And it's, I think at times we lose players for free. Obviously, the elephant in the room is Jed Wallace. And I think hopefully with Aldo coming in as well, that can help shift that a little bit. But I do wonder, I mean, Joe, maybe you can elaborate on it a little before me, but like, how can we negate the kind of worries of losing Jed on a free transfer in the future, for example? Because he's probably going to go, right, unless we go up. I can't see anything else happening there.
Yeah, I mean, I'll be gutted to see Jed go. I think it'd be a massive loss for the club. I think we could actually replace him with anyone else. I mean, for us to go out in the market and replace him, we've got to spend a lot of money, which we haven't got. So to try and find someone to kind of fill those shoes can be very, very difficult. So I personally think he will go. What I can't quite understand is why won't Mill just throw money at him? You know, obviously, yeah, you may not want to upset the apple cart on wages, but perhaps they could offer him a big signing on fee. You know, if it's a financial thing. But then I don't think if maybe money's not quite the reason why he wants to leave. I think, he wants to play in the Premiership. Maybe he doesn't see that happening at Millwall over the next sort of year or two. But going back to Aldo, I mean, I see it as quite a good appointment. I don't think he did too badly when he was here the last time. I mean, Omar, you probably know better than most of us on the players that he helped bring into Millwall. I'm sure people like Cooper were one of them, maybe Bradshaw, if it was at Gregory before, I'm not quite sure it was, but he did bring some good signings in. The experience he's had at Stoke would only make him even better for it, I'm pretty sure of it. I believe he's a Millwall fan as well, so he's got that kind of passion to want to do extra well at Millwall. And I think he could be very, very handy for us this season. And let's be honest, this summer is going to be a massive, massive transfer ins and outs. Lots of players leaving, lots of loan players are going to be going back to their clubs. So this summer, it's going to be exciting. There's going to be lots of new players coming in, and hopefully Aldo can get his little black book out and recommend some names.
I think with Aldo in particular, I think he was quite good. I think I remember Harris crediting him a lot for it. Obviously, the 23 signings we made. So Bury is one of them. And also Marlon Romeo was a 23 signing we made initially that then kind of got his opportunities playing the squad. And I think, especially at League One level, we've done well at picking up players that were on the downward trend, but young players at the same time. And then obviously even Harry Smith, for example, was another one kind of plucked out of nowhere and played a few games and obviously kind of came into it. I mean, Chris, obviously, we were saying obviously about departures. Loan players, obviously, that we've got at the club at the moment. Obviously, a Phobie, one of them has obviously got 9 goals this season. Would you keep a Phobie and anyone else that maybe you'd try and kind of earmark to be here for next season?
I think context is key here because it depends on what comes with it. So is a Phobie, because I would imagine a Phobie's actual wage at Stoke is beyond anything that we're paying anyone at the moment, right? So if it's to make him the highest paid player at the club, no, I wouldn't keep him. Whereas if we can sign him on a free or a really sensible transfer fee and integrate him into our wage structure, then actually I would keep a Phobie. I don't think he's the best player, but I think he can hold the ball up well. I think he's quite an intelligent player. His finishing's a bit hit and miss, but I also think he's a good character to have around the club as well, from what I've heard. I think he's a good bloke. And I think he genuinely quite gets the kind of Millwall way. So I personally quite like him. Shay Ojo is the interesting one for me because he was getting really good just before he got injured. He was, I think it was the Palace game. He was superb against Palace. He was brilliant. And then obviously got injured against Forest, I think it was. And he was having a great half in that game with Bradshaw. And I believe he's out of contract in the summer as well. What do you think, fellas? Like, would you keep Would you keep Ojo if the opportunity came around? I think Burke's out of contract in the summer, possibly. Freeman, you know, where's your head at?
I know Kai's a big fan of Shea Ojo, so I know he mentioned him the other day. And I think you was impressed, Kai, with obviously how he was doing his recuperation after his injury back at the club as well. I mean, he could easily have gone back to Liverpool and just sacked it off and just, you know, saw out the rest of the season even potentially. But he seemed eager to play through his contract almost, it felt like. I think you told me the other day.
Yeah, no, definitely. Like, you know, Liverpool, there's probably no secret. Liverpool training grounds, what Millwall training ground is in terms of glamorous, the equipment there. But to choose to stay at Millwall, I know we still had 8 games to go and there's still plenty of time for him to show what he's got. But I think it would have been quite easy for him maybe to go back there and then come back for the last 8 games, not really knowing what the team's doing. You know, it's just good to see that connection maybe between the players. I think that connection, players always talk about the Millwall dressing room being one of the best they've ever been in. And I think when players do stuff like that and want to stay, it backs it up. Because if you didn't like the change room or dressing room, you go back to Liverpool, who, as I said, no doubt have a much more glamorous training ground. So I really like Ojo. I think he's very clever. As you said, just before he got injured, he was just starting to show what it was about. He's got really quick feet. Sometimes for my like, he doesn't show that burst of pace that I think he has, but he draws players into committing so many fouls on him because his feet is so quick. And if you don't get it right, you're going to bring him down. And yeah, we get fouls. But I'm hoping to see us get more penalties as well when he comes back in. Just the quick feet in the box. And I'd like to see him add a bit more scoring touch as well, because I think he can do it at Cardiff. And he had quite a good eye for goal.
I think the big one for me is, Daniel Ballard. That's the one for me, Daniel Ballard. I don't know. Be interesting what happens with him next season. I can't see him getting a Premier League move. I don't think he's had a full season at the whip, so to speak, and playing week in, week out. So I do think maybe a development for him will be a championship again. But do you see, mate, I know jobs are cut in there, do you think Ballard will be here next season? Is that someone that do you reckon he'd want to stick around for another season?
I rate Ballard. I mean, what was great is he came in when Hutchison was injured. I don't think he was quite 100% fit, was he? But he still played fantastically well. And I think each game that he's been back, he's just got better and better. He's getting fitter and fitter. What's really interesting with Ballard is last season, I think he was like player of the year for Blackpool. I'm sure Kai will probably know that, if that's right or wrong. He's done really, really well there. Stepped up a league to the Championship, done really well in the Championship. I don't think he's, and I mean this with the utmost respect, I don't think he's quite good enough to play for Arsenal or even play for any sort of top Premiership team. As good as he is as a defender, I think in the Premier League, especially at that level, you're looking at the top four, top six teams, you've got to be technically a very, very good player with the ball at your feet. You've got to be a ball-playing defender. And although he's not terrible with the ball at his feet, I don't think he's quite at the level where you need to be at. So, you know, can you see him break into the Arsenal team? I don't think that's going to happen in the next sort of couple of seasons. Will it ever happen? I don't know. Could he do another year at Mill? Probably yes, you know. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see him back again for another season next season. The player that I was most impressed with up until he got injured was Burke. He wasn't quite successful as in scoring goals or creating many assists or anything, but he was dangerous. He was lively. His speed was rapid. And you just kind of felt that as soon as he gets that first goal, he'll be on a roll. You know, and he'd be a real good outlet for us. Of course, he got injured and... It's a real shame, but I think he's coming back over the next sort of couple of weeks, I think I read somewhere. Afobe is an interesting one because I think he's a bit of a crowd pleaser. It sounds like everywhere he's gone alone, every team has always loved him. He's always played to the fans. He's always shown a lot of passion. He's always played for the shirt, for the badge. He does that at Millwall and the fans really, really support him, which is great. He's a bit of a confidence player. I think you've got to sing his name, chart him to kind of get him playing. When he come back recently, I don't think he's quite match fit. And I go and watch Mill with my older son. And he was saying to me, Dad, I don't know why, you know, why bother with Fofobi. You know, we should let him go in the season. Why should we even think about him signing him? But after two or three games, once you kind of feel that he kind of healed from his injuries, and I think it showed in the last match against Huddersfield, you can see what the player can do. You know, yes, he's not going to be prolific in front of goal, but if you're a defender and he's on song, he'll probably be one of the worst players you want to play against. If he's very physical, you know, he creates space for others. He gets in areas. He creates his chances. So I agree with what Chris is saying. if we can get him on a cheap, if he's willing to take a bit of a pay cut on the wages, I think he'd be a good signing for Millwall. If he wants top money, it means us having to, you know, break the bank for him. I don't think it'd be a wise move for us.
Go on, Chris.
No, I agree. I also think with Afobe that, going back to what we were saying earlier about the way we play football and the way our tactics are we really going to be able to attract a striker that we all want, which is a 20, 25 goal a season striker? Because they've got to do a lot of dirty work to play for Millwall in this system. They have got to do a lot of pressing. They've got to do a lot, you know, running the channels and things like that. So we could do a lot worse, I think, is what I would say about Afobe. So I guess we'll see where that ends up. But I just want to come back to Ballard, because one of the things that I'm really impressed with Ballard is, let's face it, he is a 22-year-old coming from Arsenal. But his attitude and the way he's, for me, the way he's kind of presented himself has not been of some sort of flash 22-year-old that's come from Arsenal. And he's really kind of got to grit. He's a Millwall type player, I think, like in terms of the way he approaches the game, the way he goes in with tackles and the way he does things. So I think Ballard's got a really bright future. Will he ever play for Arsenal? Probably not. And he probably knows that. But he play in the Premier League for someone? Yes. But I'd love to get him back next year for another year. I think he'd do really, really well. And if we're going to continue to play free at the back, he can either slot in on the right-hand side or in the centre.
I think it's fine there. To your point. Yeah.
Sorry, Chris. That point you mentioned just before that about the system that we play in as attackers, what is our system? Because one minute we're sort of playing with three up front with, you know, a central point of someone like Afobe in the middle with the two wingers. Then with the injuries, again, Rowett had to kind of almost adjust and adapt to the players that are available. And he kind of created the system where he played Jed behind the front two. And that really worked. But to play that system, you can't really have a poacher playing up front. You almost need like an advanced forward or a winger type player, like a Bennett and a Bury or a Burke, that's got the pace to get in behind players, maybe get into the channels and work. So, you know, a 20 plus goal scorer will probably be playing more of a kind of central role. So to attract a sort of player, we then have to change the system to fit around this. So has Rowett actually worked out? I think he's quite worked out. He wants to play with a back three, back five. I think he enjoys playing with a two midfields. But the attacking bit, has he kind of worked out yet? Does he want to play a number 10 behind the front two? Does he want to play a front three? Maybe he wants to adapt. Where do you see is our best tactical approach going forward?
I mean, that to me is something that I have actually seen change over the course of the season, because I remember towards the start of the season, we would have our two fullbacks, Malone, McNamara, and then we'd have two wide players. And I almost felt they were kind of in each other's way at times.
You're right.
It just wasn't working for me. What he's now done is, although he's still playing kind of, I won't call them strikers, I'll call them forwards in the kind of modern lingo, if you like. Yeah. But they're playing slightly closer together. So obviously you've got Jed just behind it. And then obviously when Ojo comes back, he was playing in that position just before, that kind of free role and sort of finding that space. It's interesting to see what he does with Ojo coming back. So I think you're right. I think Rowett has found, and whether that's by accident and luck or whether that's just, I don't know, and, you know, we'll take it, of course. But I think he has found a way in which he likes to play. The only thing I would like him to do, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, Omar, is like, at times at home, and at the moment we can't complain because I think we've now won five and drawn two of our last seven home games, right? So we can't complain. But at home, sometimes I wish he would just go forward to back and just sort of give it a little bit more, you know, not be so rigid in his formation.
I agree. I do think, but like you say, we can't knock it because at the end of the day, he's doing the business. And I don't think we're going to, at this level anyway, unless we recruit really well next summer and it moves on, we're never going to play teams off the park. But what I would say is obviously, like, there is a time and need sometimes. I think Middlesbrough game is probably a good example of it, where you want a bit of Millwallness to it. You know, you want Ben Thompson suddenly in the middle, busy around there. Or Jimmy Abdu, for example, like kind of putting the work in and just getting the fans going. And there is times where you think, if Rich was on the front foot here and went for it, we could probably roll teams over. But like I said, you can't really knock it at the end of the day. But I do agree with you. There is times where you could just kind of throw the kitchen sink at it. But end of the day, we're doing the business, I suppose, at least at the moment.
Kai? Mute.
Oh, my God.
I've been the first one. No. It's awful.
At least I'm not the first, and at least I'm not going to do it. But yeah, Christ, come on! No. I know I was the first actually. I think at the beginning.
Was that pre-show?
Let's go. Let's start again. Kai, your thoughts to end this part one on what's just been said, obviously about the formations, etc., etc.
No, I think I agree with both Chris and Omar, but I think at the same time, the five at the back, I think it depends how you utilise it. With the wing backs, if you use it right, the wing backs just get so high, and you can. Scott Malone, obviously, that was so good against Huddersfield. I thought he ran Sauber Thomas absolutely ragged that night. And obviously, Danny shows how far forward he can get. And Danny hasn't actually scored yet, but every game that goes by, he looks closer and closer to scoring, just because he gets so in such advanced areas. And I think if you use them well enough, you can really create an overload. Wide of the pitch. And if you do that, then it obviously gives more space because players are coming out wide. It gives you more space in the middle for players like Bennett and maybe Burke or Jed, whoever is in there to get in the box for headers or finishes. So it depends how you use it. But then again, I agree with what you both said as well about 4-4-4 at the back. It'd be nice to see us maybe take it, lose that defender and just go for it and maybe overload them more in the middle. Maybe that would work as well. So I reckon both of them could work. But yeah, it depends how you play them, I guess.
You really want to be there, don't you? Sorry, Mickey, I did say. You really want to be there when Danny Matt scores his first goal for Millwall, don't you? Like, you just want to, you can imagine the pandemonium in the stands. I had that kind of thing of when Sid Nelson was playing for us, because you want to be there when Sid Nelson scored his first goal for Millwall, I felt like. And I think Danny Matt's a similar one where you don't know what he's going to do with himself when he scores for Millwall, because, a Millwall fan scoring a goal at Millwall, that is like the top what you want as a Millwall fan in the stands watching it at the Den, that's for sure.
That's it. And that brings us on to a lovely crescendo to be able to end on part one. We'll be back continuing our conversation with Danny Mac. But yeah, please join us. Right, that's it of part one. I'm now going to do something what you probably really shouldn't do. I'm going to advertise a rival podcast and play a clip from an upcoming episode of a rival podcast. That podcast is Wall Talk, and they have done a special show remembering Paul Jiggins. Paul Jiggins, I wasn't best mates with him. I didn't really know him. I knew him to say hello to, and I knew him to give him a nod at away games, etc., etc. But Paul Jiggins' help during the regen battle, the AMS battle, was second to none. He stayed in the shadows, and the advice, the guidance, the help he gave, especially when we decided to stand a candidate in a general election, was fantastic. So for the next couple of minutes, you're going to hear the advert, what Millwall put out for their Wall Talk. And remember, if you do want to listen to that, you can go on to Millwall and search Wall Talk under your podcast provider, or just look in the show notes below, and we will be including a link in there. So the next voice you hear will be Max telling you about their upcoming episode for Wall Talk. And we'll be back after that.
Hello and welcome to our brand new show, Wall Talk, the official podcast of Millwall Football Club, direct from SC16. And a new signing for us here at the Den. Joining us is Paul Jiggins from The Sun and a regular guest on TalkSport.
I think in February I celebrate my 39th anniversary of my first Millwall match, which is quite remarkable. I must be the only person to have gone there 15 years before I was born.
I say I'm being joined by Paul Jiggins. It looks like a rather rough Jiggo after your weekend of celebrations,
yes.
Wasn't it, Jiggo?
I turned 50 yesterday.
Happy birthday, Jiggo.
Happy birthday. As young as 50.
As young as 50, you fucker.
Hang on. As a ginger, I'm going to disagree with that. Bring back the snow. Bring back the overcast.
I'd always go cheese and beans if I ever had a jam potato.
Yeah.
Which would butter. be just,
Just butter.
Yeah, just butter.
It's you're weird. It's that's yeah. weird. You're
stealing no, it's you're just stealing just... a spud.
Literally.
There's absolutely no point to that.
Yeah, potato enough, yeah. on your plate.
I've never been to a spud. You're like, now you know why.
It's been a mental summer, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Been too long as well.
I know. I've missed you. I didn't think I would, but I've missed you.
Any more Chineses?
No. Talking of Sun, you went to Seville over the summer.
Can't you tell by my tan? Yeah. Although, to be fair, that's coming off that fucking light. I'm absolutely melting with this. Fellow in a full Millwall, just head to toe in the old yellow husky Millwall away kit. Thought he was, whereabouts in Bermondsey are you from? Care? Spanish, mate. So I pulled up my arm, showed him the tattoo on my arm. He's then gone mental and showed me, spent the next 20 minutes having to watch videos on his phone. So to get him on here, and for him to be so humble and not realise the impact he has had on generations of Millwall fans was fantastic for me.
It's our first celebrity episode, Celebrity
yeah,
Wall Talk.
Yeah, I think...
Take that, LO.
I think that's mad.
Eat magazine, up your arse. We're coming for you.
Yeah, well, look.
What do you do? What do you,
well, I've got enough, I've you got enough hair
you on basically chest, eat so. A bald potato.
Fuck off. You can't be talking about me and a potato and you're saying you're having butter on a jacket potato.
Mark the coat, as we know.
Mark the coat, as Chopper was calling him, and then
for his love of Neil Warnock, he mentioned him every episode.
No, yeah, I apologise.
He was always on my mind.
I'd probably go back for my first goalkeeper. Yeah. I remember seeing him regularly with Paul Sanson,
and just like the Den will next season, and the Den always has done. You know, 10,000 an year is equatable to 30,000 elsewhere. I would say. That was undoubtedly, certainly the semi-final win was probably the greatest day of my life, and I include becoming a father in that, because
that's like Mrs. Jiggins isn't listening.
No, she knows already. I'll explain why, because I always had an idea one day that that I'd become a father, which, looking at me, I know you're thinking, yeah, I wouldn't be quite so sure. You know, you had a bit of confidence, a bit overconfidence there, but I never ever dreamt that Mill will get to an FA Cup final. Growing up, the best one
was
or the worst
Morrow.
One.
Morrow. No one had touched Morrow. No, that's the only reason I met to him. Everyone's scared of him. That's
never right. Care your chicken, son. Every Millwall fan knows that.
How much do you love Wall Talk?
That's a very strange question, mate. Especially you seem to be sitting closer to me and looking me straight in the eye. You made me quite unnerving.
I can't believe you've gone for the muggy answer there, because you'd love to text me about Wall Talk, potential guests and future ideas. You've come up with a very good Christmas one, so don't pretend like you don't love it.
Oh, mate, of course I love it. We're almost pals there.
Yeah,
nearly.
Almost.
Almost.
Oh, I'm just showing you the love. Get thrown back in my face, not for the first time.
Welcome back to part two. It's not been a bad show so far. I think part one was quite good. The two new guests have seemed to perform, so they've broken their virginity, they've broken their cherry, whichever way you want to call it, and I think we'll have to do a Twitter poll now to see who gets the job and who gets fired. But anyway, we'll move on. One for you boys to get your teeth into now, and I think it's one that's been highly discussed amongst many Millwall fans over this season. Danny Mac or Leonard at right back? We'll start with you, Chris.
I love Danny Mac. I think he's absolutely superb, and I still don't get why he's not been called up to the Republic of Ireland squad. I see a lot of tweets about why he should be. I think he's very consistent, and he's also improved throughout the season. I do want to see him add some more numbers to his game. And I think Rowett actually said that. Like, obviously he's not scored yet. We want to see him score and have a few more assists and things. I personally prefer him because I think he's more attack minded. However, I love Leonard. I think Leonard is a fantastic player to have in your squad because he can play centre mid, right back, right wing back, centre back. I think he can do a great job. He's a little bit injury prone. I think he's had now two quite significant injuries since he's been with us, but I think he's a real 100%er, and I really quite like him. If it was down to me, I'd have Danny Mac though at right back, and I see him being our right back for quite some time. And it's good to have competition at the end of the day. I think we need competition for places, particularly if we're gonna move forward. So Danny Mac for me. But Joe, what do you think?
I agree with everything you said there. One thing that I've really noticed is, for me, you know, there's been a lot of top performances this season, certainly the last sort of 8 games or so. But the two players that really stood out for me, and I'm quite proud of it because they're Millwall youngsters, is Mitchell and Danny Mack. And I don't think they will be playing to the levels they're playing at the moment if it wasn't for the fact they're getting game time and consistently playing week in, week out. And you can see it every week, they're growing in confidence. It's been Mitchell the last 2 or 3 games. It's been brilliant. Equally so is Danny Mack. Danny Mack is great going forward. I think he drives forward. You're right, probably doesn't quite get the numbers or the stats for the assists or goals. But what you see him do defensively is brilliantly. I mean, his tackles is like a proper old-school Mill defender type tackle, and it really gets the fans going, you know, and he knows what the Mill fans want. With regards to Leonard, I rate Leonard. I really like Leonard. I see him as a bit more of a utility player. So he's the sort of player who will probably give you 7 or 8 out of 10, you know, most games, whereas Danny Mack will probably give you 9 on occasions. You're right, Leonard could play centre-back, he could play right-wing-back, he could play midfield. I think with the international break, the boys will have a well-earned rest. Hopefully, we'll come back feeling a lot more fresher for the Luton game. And I think out of loyalty, Rowett has to stick with the same team that's got him where he is now. Now, if there's a run of games when suddenly, you know, McNamara or Mitchell or whoever it might be are really struggling and, you know, need a bit of a rest, then yes, bring Leonard in then, you know, get him on the last 15 minutes, maybe give McNamara a bit of a rest. But I don't think you can pull McNamara out and then put Leonard in. Although he'll do a good job for you, I just don't think it's, you know, the right thing to do. I think you've got to stick by your players, give them that opportunity to kind of flourish and continue to develop.
Danny Mack's an interesting one, I think. And I think it is weird that at the start of the season, he had the shirt, then he came out for a few games with Leonard playing. And that is back to the question of why is he preferring Leonard at right wing back? I think Leonard does a job anyway. And I think that's probably why he gets put into these positions where Brian goes, oh, I'll give him the nod because he's reliable. But I think you're right when you said about Danny Mack, he can give you a 9 out of 10 some games. And that's probably what Leonard is not going to do in that position because he's not a natural right wing back either. But I think with Leonard, you're right, he's a utility man, plays centre half and does a job, right wing back does a job. But I think it does raise your eyebrows a little bit that the last 8 games, like you said, in that run where Mitchell and McNamara are the best players, you could argue start of the season, Mitchell didn't have the shirt to start of the season either. And Injuries have kind of forced this to happen. And now all of a sudden, you know, they're in and they're holding it down on their own. And you can't knock that, can you, Joe? I think that is ultimately what it is. Like, they got the opportunity and come in and took it, haven't they?
Well, that's it. And that's what you want from them to do. If they didn't take the opportunity, if they didn't play to the levels they're playing at, then you say, well, you know what, it's an opportunity wasted. But the fact that they've taken the opportunity, they're really growing in confidence, they're really, you know, claiming that position and claiming that shirt. I think it's really unfair to bring, you know, Leonard in there at right wing back instead of McNamara. And equally, I wouldn't feel that George Evans or Keith or anyone else, or even Leonard for that reason, should take Mitchell's place, or even Saville. I think the two of them in the last few games have really struck a really great partnership in midfield.
No, definitely. I think what I was going to say is that we're talking about going back to injuries and how injuries have sort of forced his hand. What was interesting with Gary, what he said, is that had Leonard not got injured before that Bournemouth match back in November, he was going to start he's going to start Leonard. And he said that Leonard was his first choice right back up until then because he thought he'd been playing well and he wanted to continue playing him. But I think that's where it's tough, isn't it? When a player's playing well, it's really difficult to take him out. But Danny almost disappeared from the squad, didn't he? I don't think he was in the squad for a couple of games. And the question was, where is he? Injured? No, he just, you know, we're playing a few more attackers. You did notice there's an extra couple of attackers on the bench. But I think when you've got a player available like Danny who's fit to play in his actual position, you've got to play someone in their actual position over someone that's a utility player. If you know, Billy gets injured and Leonard's there, you wouldn't suddenly put Danny at midfield, would you? You'd put Leonard in midfield. So I know he can play there, but he did a good job in fairness to him. But I think there was a slight difference in maybe opinion in that from Gary. But hopefully Danny's now turned that around. Mickey, what was your thoughts?
Oh, look, Danny Mack all day long. I think Danny Mack is underappreciated, to be fair, to a degree. I think the problem we've got, which I'll throw a spanner in the works to get you four off with it again, is that obviously we've got a source close to us who's been talking to us who thinks that Leonard, as soon as he's fit, will take over that right back position over Danny Mack. And also, you've got to look at, why is Danny Mack got a year left on his contract, and allegedly contract negotiations haven't even started yet. I know there's a year away, but to me, the way Danny Mac is, he's a Millwall fan. He wants to play for his, you know, his dream club, which is Millwall. Why aren't we signing him up? He's only young. Why aren't we signing him up on a 2-3 year contract to be able to get him going? So my thing to you boys is Rarick's relationship with Ryan Leonard better than it is with Danny Mac? And will that position? I honestly think Ryan Leonard's fit tomorrow. Ryan Leonard is playing right back, as what Kai said. He said it back in November. And I think, according to my sources, that's what it is. And also, do you think it's criminal that a player, the player of the level of Danny Mac is and the age he is, that we're not tying him up on a long-term contract, even if you don't want him, just to stop oppositions being able to get him, and let's make a few quid out of him going forward. So, look, I'll throw it open to whichever one wants to come in first. Is I think Ryan Leonard will play right back over him. And do you think it is criminal that Danny Mac hasn't been offered a new contract? So we go to you, Chris.
Yeah, I mean, I'm hoping now, because November was quite a long time ago in football terms, and obviously Danny Mac has now come in and performed very, very well. And I'm hoping now that even if Leonard is available for selection after for the Luton game, for example, he's not going to be fully match fit. So we've only got 8 games. I'd like to think that it won't be a simple case of Danny Mac out, Leonard in. I think you might try and incorporate Leonard into the squad a bit more, give him 10, 15 minutes here and there. But I guess we'll see. So I'm hopeful that that won't be the case, depending on obviously what the sources say. So that's the first point. The second point for me, and it kind of goes back to what we were talking about earlier. If you look at our current squad, what players have resale value? And Danny Mac, on a long-term contract, he's absolutely one of them. He's a player that, for me, when I look at what players do we have that could get in other top half championship teams, Danny Mac is one of them. And I don't think we have many, which is why I always think, I know a lot of Millwall fans hate saying it, we are punching above our weight, because I think there's a lot of players that we have that wouldn't necessarily get into other top 10 clubs. So I think it is criminal that we're not starting these negotiations. I did read something a little while ago that he hasn't started negotiations with anyone, and that's something that's going to wait till the summer. So I'm hoping it's just a case of that, and in the summer, the 3-year contract comes out. But Kai, what do you think?
No, I think you're right. I think that statement was about Conor Mahoney, wasn't it? I think the one where Dwight won't start until... Yeah, that's right. I'm sort of thinking that maybe they haven't started it yet because Harvey Bussell only maybe left, and obviously Aldo's only just come in. Maybe it's a little bit of a transition period with both of them. Sort of one sort of learning his new role, the other one's gone. Maybe in a couple of weeks when he's maybe settled in again. Maybe you never know. Maybe he'll start it again. That's my thoughts. But I mean, I really hope Danny stays. That this, yeah, as Mickey said, it'd be criminal to let him go, wouldn't it? Or just not sign him again.
But why leave it so late though? I mean, they left it quite late with Jed, didn't they? And they, you know, there's a few players that do that now. Well, rather than, like Chris said, tie him up to a long-term contract, especially when they're quite young, at an early stage, why leave it till later as possible? Because the longer you leave it, you're giving the player the power to pick and choose what they want to do. And of course, they'll probably be wanting a bigger contract if they're playing really well. Danny Mac, I'll be very surprised if he's not playing the Premiership in 3 years' time.
Yeah,
you know, that's with us or without us. So if it's not with us, do we want him to leave on a free like Jed's going to do potentially this summer? Or do we want to get a decent sum of money for him? And the only way we can get the money for him is if we tie him into a 4-year deal or a 5-year deal that hopefully will cover him for the next few years and then sell him. You know, and as much as I wouldn't want to see him go, going back to your point, Chris, about resale value, we need players like this, tie him into long contracts to sell them, do what Brentford does, sell these players off, make some money, replace them. You know, put Leonard in then. You know, if you let Danny Mac go for 5 million or 6 million or whatever it might be, hopefully a bit more. But unless you tie them to long-term deals, It's not going to be sustainable, is it, for Millwall? We need to kind of be thinking a bit more ahead. What do you think, Omar?
I think with that one, you're right. I think also maybe with Danny Mac, it's a different scenario because he's a Millwall fan and you wouldn't think he'd... If you wait till the summer, then hopefully you get a deal done quite easily. But if the player's playing well, and they say they've got ulterior motives and they're only here using us as a stopgap, which I'm sure players try to do so when they're in the Championship, then you're kind of shoehorning yourself into a position, like you said there, Joe, where they might demand a bit more money, or then you put yourself on the back foot a little bit. And you've got to think, like, if he's, what, Danny Mac's 23, 24 years old, and he's playing out of his skin at the minute, just give him a contract and get it done now and just put any uncertainty away from it. And I guess it does raise the question of, does Wright fancy him? But then ultimately, if you've got Aldo there to pull the strings and, you know, say, this is the players we want, you've got to just get him signed up and get him on a long-term contract, because these are the players you want in the club to build for the long-term future, I have to say.
I agree. And I think the way Danny Mac is now, he's potentially going to be a £5-6 million player. Potentially, if he carries on playing like he is for another season, he's potentially going to push that figure up. And surely that's a figure that he and the club would potentially want coming into the club for him to forward his football career to go into a Premiership team, because I think there's something in Danny Mac going forward. I think he is a player there, but I just, under what we're hearing from a source who's quite well connected, allegedly, it's a very concerning affair that he's not being spoken to, and he doesn't seem to possibly have a great relationship with the management at the moment. But hey ho, we'll see where we go from there. So, gents, let's. We're coming to the towards the end side of all of this. So we'll start with you, Joe. I forwarded you all the Middlesbrough newspaper article about your end of season predictions. I'm the only one who's actually, I think maybe Kai, I was the only one who put Millwall into the potential playoffs and 74 points. We've done a varied few between us, and it's quite a good thing. And if you're listening to this and you want to have a go at it, we will check out the show notes and you'll find the link so you can do it yourself and then just copy us in across socials and let's see what you've worked it out as well. But we'll go with you, Joe. Your top six finishes, and obviously if Millwall's not in that top six, where do you put Millwall? So,
okay, no pressure. I try to be... you know, as non-biased as I can. I looked at the fixtures and the games, and typically with Millwall, we play really, really well against the top sides. We don't do as well, I feel, against the lower teams. I think a reason behind that is where we're a counter-attacking team, and we've seen it at the Den quite often, when teams just sit back and they play for the draw, and we lack the creativity to kind of get in and create chances, we struggle. Whereas good teams that come to attack us, where we're playing home and away, it really suits us. So looking at the games, last eight games coming up, there's a few curveball ones in there where I probably put us down for a draw rather than a win, because I just see it being a tough game. So my prediction, I'm sorry to say, was Mill finish eighth, which is Rowett's best finish so far, and I think Harris as well. That being said, I predicted we'll finish with 72 points, which would be only 1 point behind Sheffield United in six. And above Sheffield United, I've got Nottingham Forest at 77, Middlesbrough 78, Luton 78, and then, of course, Fulham and Bournemouth running way a bit at the top. What was interesting as well, I looked into this, in the last 10 seasons, the average top six spot was about 74 points. So we were only kind of 2 points, in my prediction, short of where we need to be to qualify for a sixth spot. So that being said, I think we will get close to it. And it'll probably go down to the last game against Bournemouth away. And it's a game we'll probably need to win. And we'll probably lose that one, because I think Bournemouth would be up by then. They'll probably play more confidence and just kick the ball about. And, you know, unfortunately, sorry to say it, I think typical Millwall would probably just, yeah, mess up probably right at the very, very end, unfortunately.
Yeah, I've gone for the same. I'm not actually quite sure. When I did it, I'm not actually quite sure how we haven't made the playoffs with my predictions. I think I've gone for too many wins for the I've got us down to 74 points and finish eighth. I'm not sure how I've done that, but basically I've got Fulham and Bournemouth to run over there. Fulham 99 points, Borough 79, Forest 78, Luton 77, Huddersfield 76, and then QPR on same points as us, but 74, us in eighth, 74, and then Sheffield United 72. But no, I think if we do get 74 points, I think we'll make the playoffs. I mean, I think that's probably, I'm not quite sure what I was doing with the other teams, but I've obviously gone for them to win most of their games because I'm not sure. They've obviously got a head start on us. And
you've asked us to, Mickey, to predict the most unpredictable league in the country, probably in the world or in Europe as well. Like you can't predict the championship, and that is ultimately, it's a bit of fun, isn't it? But like, this is it.
It is a bit of fun. I'm not going to hold it to it, but it'll be good to get to the end of the season 100%, and maybe we'll bring us all back and we'll have another one and we'll look at these and see where we are.
Definitely.
I mean, look, you know, we'll go with you, Chris, next. And then obviously we'll go to you, Omar, and then I'll read out my top 10 and then see where we are. But we're very similar on point tallies, not necessarily in the positions, but we are very close on the points tallies. So, you know, we've worked out what's what. So, yeah, we'll go to you, Chris. Where are yours and how are your standings?
Yeah, so I've got a finish on 72 points. So I think that's 15 points from where we are now of a possible 24, which is a respectable tally. I just thought we'll win most of our home games and we, you know, maybe pick up a win at Birmingham or something like that. We sometimes do well there. The four I've got in the playoffs are Forest, Borough, Luton and Sheffield United. And I've got us, Huddersfield and Blackburn all on 72 points. So goal difference depicts whether we finish 7th or 9th. I think, look, we all want to see us in the playoffs. You know, I think 74 points would get us there. I think we probably need 6 wins out of our last 8 games, which is a tall order, but it's not impossible if we can keep the form up that we had in before the Stoke game. But I think we finish anywhere in the top 10. For me, I would deem it as a success. Of course, we want to be in the playoffs, but I think a top 10 finish, given the injuries we've had, the budgets and things like that, I think it would be a successful thing. The only thing I kind of want to float as well is if Luton can do it, why can't we? And that's something that really frustrates me because I guarantee you we've got a bigger budget than them. And it's really interesting we play them next. And to me, I'm not saying it's a must win. It's a must not lose for us, I think. I think we have to get something from that game. I'd love to see us go for the jugular and try and win it. Omar, I don't know what you think about Luton and the next game and the points.
I think we've all got Luton finishing the playoffs, haven't we? I'm pretty sure. Like, and that's mad to think at the start of the season. I think if Luton would have come in the playoffs, you would have thought how they've done that. But I think that just kind of shows how that young, hungry coach Nathan Jones has got them all kind of singing the same direction, and I think we all agree with that. I've got an actual humdinger of a finish of the season on my table because I've got from 5th to 10th separated by 1 point, and I don't know how I've done that. I don't know how that's ended up being that way, but I've got Nottingham Forest and Luton, Huddersfield and us all on the same points, and on this logic here it says we'll finish 8th. I'm not sure if that's based on goal difference or whatever. It probably would be the case, knowing our luck. If we miss out on goal difference, then we definitely need to score more goals next season, that's for sure. But yeah, I think it'll be interesting if that was the case last day of the season. I do think it will go to the last game of the season. Whether or not we'll be in that discussion, who knows? I think, I hope to be that we're in that position where there's something to play for going to the last game. And 9 games ago, I wouldn't have thought it would have been possible. So I think that's like, you've got to give the players credit for that and obviously the manager as well for that. Will we do it? I don't know. I'm not sure. And I think I've done similar. I think 4 wins, 3 draws, 1 defeat. I think we'll lose last game of the season at Bournemouth, and that probably could be what will do us, I think. But will we win 4 games? I think I've done 4 home wins, 3 draws and 1 defeat away. I mean, 3 draws away and 1 defeat away. I think our away form is probably better than that, though. So maybe we might nick a 1-0 at Preston again. I think I fancy us to do the business there. But we'll have to wait and see. Go on, Mickey. Read us your predictions, mate. And what do you think we'll finish?
Right, I've got finishing top of the league, Fulham on 99 points, Bournemouth on 88 points, QPR 83 in third place, Millwall in fourth, finishing on 79 points, Luton on fifth, finishing on 77 points, West Brom on 73 points. And then Nottingham Forest and Middlesbrough 7 and 8 on 72. Blackburn on 70. Huddersfield on 66. Playoff.
79 points. Is that 5 wins and 3 draws?
Or yeah, it's 22 points out of 24. No, it's literally like... It's
one draw. We need to have a better run than we had in the last 8 games before Stoke.
Listen. This year is the 50-year anniversary of the 71-72 season where we just missed out. And then the following year, they put 3 up instead of 2. And also, 78-79... we basically went on 2 mad runs where we had 5 on the bounce and a 7 on the bounce. So, and again after Christmas. So I think we stand a chance. It's not impossible. I think that, listen, you lot out there listening to me are going to call me a crazy cunt and fuck, you know, he's living in dreamland. I know I'm living in dreamland. And I know that, you know, realistically, it ain't going to happen. But you know what? On that, just thinking, yeah, they'll do it. Yep, they'll do it. Yep, I think that'll be a win. And doing other teams and trying to predict other teams' scores, you know, win, you know, win, home win, away win, draw. Wasn't easy to do, but hey ho, anything is possible in the Championship, and it is a league what is probably one of the closest ever it's been for years, and I would probably say that the Championship is starting to team up, as people are calling it, Premiership 2, but I think that it's probably a more competitive league than the Premiership. Go on, Kai, you're going to take the piss, off you go.
I was going to say, who have we got to get relegated, actually, just before we... I think I've got Reading to stay up by 3 points, and I think I've got Derby, Peterborough. Who's the other team that's doomed? Come on.
Barnsley, I think.
Derby will survive.
Yeah, I put Derby last just game by 1 point. By 1 point. Yeah. I've got Peterborough and Barnsley down. I think Reading will fall into the bottom three, and Derby will just survive by 1 point.
I'd love Reading to come down.
Yeah, I think Derby will survive, and then next season they'll be hit with another points deduction because allegedly it's coming. And then I think that time Rooney will just go, fuck this, I'm out. I'm out the door. I'm going.
Take the Millwall instead.
No, that's it. So look, we're coming to the end. We've got 2 points left. One is just a question more than a debate point, but this is definitely a debate point. We'll start with Kai first. Your best moment of this season so far can be a game, can be a goal, can be a celebration, can be anything you want on the pitch, but so far this season, and you're only allowed one on this show. The end of the season show we do, you can have more, but this show, it's just 1 point. One moment. What is your moment, Kai Bennett?
So I think nothing.
Don't say joining this. Don't say joining that Millwall podcast because we know that.
Well, that obviously is.
What an honour.
We're moving on from that one. Nothing beats that first day of the season, Jed Wallace one. When he comes running back to the fans, oh, wow. I just honestly.
QPR away, was it that?
Yeah, QPR
you
away
bastard. First day of the season.
Yeah, I just absolutely loved it. Well, was that your one?
Well, I was going to say just going back to games, but I'll change mine. Go on, you finish your point.
No more. It's not his. And by the way, none of you can repeat. You're all going to have different.
I hope I'm not last then.
That one, I mean, just the celebrations when he comes running back. I didn't expect him to come running back. Obviously, when they score, they normally go over, and celebrate in the corner over there. But the way he's come running back, I mean, Gary did actually criticise it after the match. I said he actually used up a bit of his energy, which was quite funny, actually. But I think that after the game, you could see how speechless Jeb was with that moment. And yeah, I thought that was probably my most special moment of the season. But obviously, hopefully, there'll be more special moments to come this season.
Absolutely. Who wants to go next? Go on then, Chris. Your fingers crossed basically where you're, oh my God. So yeah, go on.
I'm going to cheat a little bit, and I'm gonna talk about a moment, but also talk about a player. And Murray Wallace doing Cruyff turns. I forget what game quite recently. I think the Huddersfield game, I know it's recent, but I think that the performance against Huddersfield was superb and set a benchmark and a blueprint for how we should be performing at this level. But I just want to go off a tangent a little bit and just say that I think Murray Wallace has been absolutely outstanding this season. And for me, he gets my player of the season vote. And he's added the ability to sort of play a bit as well. He's so dependable where he's at the left of three centre-backs or left wing back. So I'll give Murray Wallace my moment of the season when he was, I don't know if it was against, might have been against Albert Thomas actually, or was it Isaiah Jones? I don't know. But he sort of, Cruyff turned out of it. And
three times,
went back for more. So that's going to be my moment because I love the bloke. He's going to get my player of the season.
Good shout. I think I have to agree with you there. I'll step in now and just say mine quickly because mine is actually related to Murray Wallace and it was going to Barnsley away and getting that 90th minute winner. We weren't great on the day, but him popping up and I think we won against Bristol City on the Tuesday and I was like, that's it, I'm going. So then I got up there on Saturday and just to see him stick that winner in the last minute, that was what, like, especially have not gone to away games for so long. Obviously QPR, like I said, was great to be there and stuff, but like getting that last minute winner away from home after being back from the pandemic, that was just like ultimate moment for me of the season, I think. And yeah, obviously there's loads of moments, but I think that one in particular sticks out for me.
I was thinking it was going to be Forest away again, but still we're okay. go on in, Joe.
Okay, so I just think what's left. So we've got QPR away, great, great opening game season. Murray Wallace with Cruyff turns. What was yours against Roma?
Barnsley away when he scored.
Barnsley away, Murray yeah. Wallace. I would go with... I'll go with quite an interesting one is... it's probably the Millwall QPR game. So I think that was that turning point, going back to what I said earlier in the show, where something just clicked. And I think it was a bit by accident, you know, with Bury coming on and, you know, moving the players around a little bit and changing the system. And then the way I think Bury came on about half an hour in, didn't they, when Birkwood got injured. And we just looked a threat. You know, we were counter-attacking, we were creating chances. And we just looked really good. And for the first time in a very, very long time, I actually enjoyed watching Millwall play. It wasn't like watching paint dry, you know, as it was previously to that. It wasn't defensive football. It was attacking football. It was free-flowing, you know, and I actually enjoyed the game. So for me, that was my moment. I mean, I agree with you guys as well with your ones, but if I had to pick another one, that would be mine.
I'm not sure what Mickey's is going to be, but also I was going to say, I know we only had one Mickey, but the 20-minute spell against Stoke where we turned the game on its head and went 4-4-2, I was like, this is a glimmer of what we could do. And then we've seen it since a little bit, and it's like obviously playing on the front foot, but that 20-minute spell against Stoke when we turned it around to beat them was quite special as well, I feel like.
Mm. Yeah.
Mine's probably going to be a Fobey scoring a brace, to be fair, because you lot have robbed all the other games. But basically, that was a point where all the Afobe doubters just suddenly were converted instantly. I like it when a player comes out and does something where you've had everyone slagging him off and then all of a sudden you just see all of those retreat back into going, oh yeah, what a great player. He's always had it in him. I think the only disappointing thing for that game is that he couldn't have scored a hat-trick.
That analogy you used there, Mickey,
or even more.
That analogy you used, so it's buying it, is the Ryan Woods analogy. When Woods had one good game, it's like everyone's dissing him. And then one good game, it's when people come out of the woodwork, it's like, told you he's amazing. Look at how he's put through. It's like, you can never please everyone, though, because that's the whole good thing about football. Everyone's got different opinions, haven't they? So that is that analogy.
And also, like I've always said, Cooper is always a worthy bet. I think the bets this season where he scored is a 12-1, a 14-1, and a 9-1. So, you know,
the is that with the score ending 1-0, Mickey, was it? Is that 1-0 win with Cooper score it,
And it's, you know, it's always been there. I mean, look, you know, we'll definitely have you boys back at the end of the season and we'll review all the games going forward. The moment I'd like to just end with is a newspaper article that came out this week, and I want just a quick 30 seconds reaction to it. Is Do you think it's a mark of genius, or do you think it's possibly a strange move for a manager to say? Rowett came out this week and said, obviously, the amount of money that's been spent on the new pitch at Millwall has been laid too firm. I would have thought that specification would have been down to you, and the fact that you're paying all that money, you would have had everything. They pretty much relayed all the pipe work, relayed everything. So, yeah, my question to you boys is, start with you, Kai. Is it a mark of genius to come out and say that, or do you think it's just a strange comment to come out and possibly signs of a manager who's potentially going in the summer or going in October? That's probably a joke for those of you who listen to me and Omar bitching quite regular. So, yeah.
No, I think he said that a couple of times. He said that a couple of months ago as well, to be fair. He said it in January. Some point, I can't remember when it was, I think it might be in West Brom game, he said about it. And he makes a good point in the way that the training ground is quite a soft pitch and the den is quite a hard pitch. So readjusting to that pitch is difficult. And obviously, that most of the time, the injuries seem to be in training. So maybe after a match day when they've worked really, really hard, you know, they've expended a lot of energy, they go back to on the training ground and all of a sudden they pull something because they haven't warmed up properly, or that pitch is just not quite as the same as then, I guess maybe they're readjusting. But I don't know, it's a weird comment at this stage of the season with 8 games to go. But in a way it makes sense, but I'm a bit split in between the two.
If I could jump in there, I although we could sort of, you know, not taking too seriously, I think there is a little bit of truth there. Just talking from my own experience, I play vets football, you know, old people playing football. And of course, we're succumbing to injuries quite frequently. But one thing I would say on a personal note is that we train on an old 3G pitch that hasn't got the correct underlay. And it's quite a hard pitch. And myself personally and my mates that we play with often get injured in training games because of the hard pitch. And it could be like, you know, our quads, hamstrings, calves sometimes go in. But we play on a nice 4G pitch in Esher. And we don't seem to have many injuries. So it's kind of reverse to what Rowett's saying. Rowett's saying they train on a soft pitch, play on a hard pitch. Well, we train on a hard pitch, play on a soft pitch. But a lot of our injuries are in training, after training or during training. So I think there is a little bit of truth there. It's a shame, though, because the concept of the design of having this hybrid pitch at the Den, which is fantastic, you think about it, you know, is it half grass, half artificial, which is brilliant. You can see why it costs so much money. But there could be a little bit of truth there. And I don't know how they can change it. I think what Rowett was saying is, could we then change the training pitch and make that a little bit harder in order to get the right balance for the players, because otherwise the other alternative is to rip up the pitch again then and make it go a soft pitch. And I think the point he was making there as well is that even the opposition teams, when they come, they get injured on that pitch. And I think we've noticed it. I've seen it quite a few times, players getting injured. So the point he's making, I think there could be some truth there a little bit.
Chris?
Yeah, I think there probably is an element of truth, to be honest, and the stats don't lie. The amount of injuries we've had this season, I know we laugh and joke, but it is ridiculous, to be honest. The only thing, and it was going back to what Kai said, I just don't get why you would come out and say it. That's the bit I don't quite understand. I've always thought that Rowett actually speaks quite well, and he comes across quite well in interviews. And when I saw this, and obviously I've only seen it written, I've not heard him say it, so context is key here. I just don't get why you would say it. I don't get what he's getting.
No, nor do I. I don't understand why he come out of it either. Me, if the pitch is hard, and as you said, Joe, that players who are coming here are getting injured too, you're sort of opening yourself up for potential lawsuit from away clubs to say, actually, the pitch could be... Listen, we live in a crazy world now where you get sued for fucking anything. Do you know what I mean? You know, and...
Is he protecting himself, Mickey? Do you think he's protecting himself? You know, I've heard some Millwall fans sort of almost ask the question, what the hell goes on in training? Is it the training methods? You know, are they working too hard? You know, and maybe is it his way of trying to justify that what he's doing is not wrong? Yeah, and almost passing the blame.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, it could have been a question to say, you know, are players training too hard?
Yeah.
And that's why they're being injured. And I agree with you, you know, until you can hear the audio, then, yeah, you don't know.
And let's be honest, Mickey, as well. I mean, quite often when they are getting injured, we're not hearing about them getting injured in training. We're seeing it in match days when they're getting injured, you know?
Yeah. It's a bit like Russian roulette now, isn't it, with that? But, yeah. Omar, your thoughts?
Yeah, to be honest with you, I don't truly know. I mean, it is an interesting comment to make, and I do agree with the pair of Chris and Kai there. Like, why come out and say that? But then, like you say, Mickey, it could have been out of context, could have been another meaning to it, but it's written in a certain way and it's come across that way. But yeah, I don't know. Footballers getting injured, it's just part and parcel of the game. But I do think it's the nature of the Championship is that the games come thick and fast. But it's such a weird circumstance. I think it's only Billy Mitchell that's not had an injury this season. And you think, like, that's some going. And but to still be at that end of the, like, involved in the business, you got to wonder, like, if we had no injuries whatsoever this season, which is obviously impossible, but if we had a couple of injuries, where would we be if we had a full fit squad to pit for the whole season? But if buts and maybes, I suppose, and you never truly know, I suppose.
No, that's it. Well, look, I think that brings this to an end. This is around an hour and a half. It is a round table show, and hopefully let us know if you've enjoyed, and we will hopefully do some more. And if you want to take part in one of the upcoming ones, then do as these guys did. Just drop us a DM and say, I quite fancy coming on. What do I need to do? It's as easy as that. Then you can have your live edition like these two are. And as I said, one gets fired and one gets burned. So, you know, you won't see one of them again, but we'll leave that down to you. Maybe we'll get a poll going to see which one gets the job and which one don't. No, I'm joking. They're both good as gold. I'd like to say thank you very much to Joe for coming on. Is there anything you want to say before I terminate, or are you okay?
Yeah, I'm all good. Just thank you for having me. You know, really enjoyed it. Love watching and listening to your shows, guys. And yeah, just keep doing what you're doing, and thank you, yeah, for everything you do for us each week.
Do you know what? I feel like a bit like Ken Bruce now with his quiz on the thing. You go, well done for taking part. You've done fantastically well. Is there anyone you want to say hello to while you're on national radio? Chris, is there anyone you want to say hello to? Or anything you want to say before we go?
Just say hello to me, mum. No, I'm joking. No, just what Joe said. Thank you very much for having me. Really enjoyed it. And hopefully we'll come back on here again. But thanks a lot.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think you've been great. Kai, thank you very much for taking part and turning up.
No worries, mate. Thank you very much, Chris and Joe. It's been a good episode. I've really enjoyed that.
Thanks, guys.
Omar. That was blinding, wasn't it? I quite enjoyed doing that. You?
Yeah, definitely. I thought it's a good little discussion and great contributions for both Chris and Joe. And yeah, Kai's obviously always here. So cheers, Kai.
No, that's it, isn't it. So yeah, look, thanks very much for joining us. If you want to continue the debate and get across our social medias, we'll be tagging these guys in when we release the show across there. So you're more than welcome to continue the debate across there. We've raised quite a few subjects. Well, hopefully we'll get you interested and want you to get into the debate. And we'd love to continue it forward. And again, if you've got anything you want to get to us directly, just drop us a DM. If you've got any inside information, anything like that, then yeah, drop us a DM and we're happy to discuss. So yeah, thanks very much for joining us. That's the end of our first round table. You know what to do. Like, subscribe, all that bollocks. So thank you very much, and I'll speak to you again soon.